We'll call into session the House Committee on Student Achievement and School Accountability. Welcome, colleagues, and welcome, audience. We are going to begin this morning with a work session on House Bill 2006.
So moved.
And we'll ask Harvey Matthews to come up, and while he's doing that, perhaps Janet, you could read the bill summary for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. House Bill 2006 had a hearing on March 6th. It's the bill that would extend the sunset date on the Education Leadership Team by 2 years to make it July 1st, 2003. We do have, since that meeting, the Dash 1 amendments that were distributed yesterday. Those amendments delete the timelines that really applied to the last interim, including the requirement that the Education Leadership Team hold a summit. This is one of the major features of the previous legislation and of the leadership team, kind of a kickoff and a large summit in Portland. The amendments also limit the number of meetings of the leadership team to 6 during the next interim period. It deletes the contract provisions between the Department of Education and Legislative Administration, and it adds a directive that the composition of the appointed portion of the team, the 14 non-voting members, reflect the diversity of the state's population. The other new thing you have just this morning is a fiscal impact statement for the Dash 1 amendments. We didn't have a fiscal for the original bill, but because of the limit to the number of meetings and deleting the requirement that they hold a summit, there is a reduced fiscal from what the original would have been. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all right.
Thank you, Janet. Mr. Matthews, would you like to begin?
For the record, I'm Harvey Matthews from the House Speaker's Office. Mr. Chair and members of the Education Committee, thank you very much for having me here. And it's an honor to bring this bill to back to life again, if it were. Last session, it was one of the shining educational accomplishments. It's a bipartisan bill that I think has greatly affected and impacted education in Oregon. The vision of the Education Leadership Team was to relentlessly pursue student success by getting a group of leaders together, including the governor, speaker of the House, the president of the Senate, commissioner of Bureau of Labor and Industries, many parents, many community activists, getting them all down at the same table and establishing objectives for where we as a state want to go with our public education system. So I think it was very successful over the last biennium. Representative Hobson and Representative Backlund were both members of it, and it would be great to continue the fine work forward. And in fact, it would be terrible to just let their excellent work perish after it hasn't quite been fulfilled. So I'd be happy to answer any questions regarding the bill as amended. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Smith?
No, I don't.
Oh, excuse me. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure that you have the answer to this, but I'd like to find out where we could find the answer. Is the summit eliminated totally, or is that still an option if the department could or might choose to conduct it?
Chair Backlund, Representative Hobson, the summit was eliminated in the Dash 1 amendments. The purpose of the summit during last session was to get a large group of educational and community people together to determine, to help the leadership team determine what their priorities should be. So because that has already taken place, I don't see the purpose for another summit. The same purpose does not exist. If a summit needs to be done, I think the Department of Education can still do that. It was a very worthwhile endeavor. Many people came to it, and it, I think, served a lot of other purposes just other than informing the leadership team.
Good morning. Harvey, as I understand it, the bill would permit up to six meetings in a calendar year, or is that in a biennium?
Chair Backlund, that is during the biennium.
In the biennium.
To what?
It seems to me that if there was the need for a summit could be one of those six meetings and could be planned for and advertised as such, I think. And so that might suffice to dramatize the education leadership team if that were necessary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I agree.
Any other comments, anyone?
As far as you are.
I think we had a pretty good hearing on this last time, and I think probably we were just kind of waiting for the Dash One amendments to clarify some dates and technically fix this bill. I think we all like the concept. And so if we're having no other comments or no other questions, I think we can move on, and we want to thank you for appearing today.
Thanks, Chair Backlund. I also want to thank your committee administrator. She sat down with Legislative Council and I, and we went through the old leadership team bill and really line by line figured out what was necessary and what wasn't. And she was an instrumental help in that. So thank you for letting us borrow her.
Thank you. Janet, good work.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, with that, then, we're in work. I would entertain a motion to move this on.
So move.
And we do need a Ways and Means report.
Do we not
have to move the Dash
amendments? Or have
yes, we need the Dash one first. So Representative Morris
has moved the Dash amendments.
Has moved the Dash One amendments to House Bill 2006. Questions? Any objections? So moved. Representative Morissette, would you like to continue?
Yes, I would move House Bill 2006 to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Morissette has moved House Bill 2006 as amended to Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Oh, excuse me, Janet.
I just want to be sure that the motion that is clear that we're adding, asking for a Ways and Means report to be added.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
No, I didn't hear
it. It's just a clarification that the Ways and Means referral is being added, that we're asking the speaker to add that. It didn't come to us with the Ways and Means.
Okay. We know that the fiscal impact is sufficient, but we need to put it down the Ways and Means. We have the motion on the floor. Further discussion? Representative Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to speak strongly in favor of this bill for a number of reasons. I think the communications are critical to the public. It amazes me sometimes to go out and talk to people and find out there are people who don't want to teach the STEM as if it were a class offering and in a subject matter. So I think it's important that we involve all the stakeholders. I find it particularly nice to speak in favor of this since I was asked not to speak in favor of it by persons who shall remain unnamed last session. But I think it's a great opportunity to get a whole bunch of people from different areas, and I say this all the time. We educators get ingrown and inbred and in everything else. I think it's so important that we reach out to other peoples and agencies and parts of the state, so I strongly support it. But I would also encourage the department to consider the summit, because I think the summit, I think Mr. Matthews was absolutely right in that it did bring people together and set a framework, but I don't think we want to lose the whole process where we can refocus, redefine, perhaps choose new goals or reevaluate the ones we have. I felt that the summit was a critical part of this, so I urge its passage here, there, and everywhere.
Thank you. Okay, with that, Paula, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Starr?
Excuse.
Bonner?
Aye.
Barnhart?
Aye.
Hoffman?
Aye.
Morissette?
Aye.
Nelson?
Excuse.
Nolan?
Aye.
Chair Backlund?
Chair votes aye. Having received the constitutional a number of votes to pass, we declare that House Bill 2006, as amended, will move to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2006. And we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2960.
We already passed that for 3 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Janet, would you like to read the summary for us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2960 establishes a goal of having one public school nurse for every 1,000 enrolled students and allocates an unspecified portion of tobacco settlement funds each biennium that the funds are received by the state to the Department of Education for grants to assist school districts to meet the goal. It would require school districts that receive the grants to match the grant amount dollar for dollar, and also requires the department to establish a school nurse consultant position in the department to oversee the grant program. I wanted to point out that both the school nurses and the consultant that would be hired by the Department of Education are required to be registered nurses under the bill. Mr. Chair, we heard quite a bit of the testimony regarding this healthcare situation in schools when we had the hearing on House Bill 2020 about the school-based health centers. So there aren't as many people to discuss this bill today, but you did hear quite a bit of the testimony regarding school nurses and the situation at a couple of example schools. The staff measure summary does include the Oregon City School example in the last paragraph, because that was one of the examples used at the previous hearing. And Representative Monis Anderson just walked in. We do have this morning, we do not have the fiscal impact statement for the bill. There were some assumptions that still needed to be worked out, but this bill also would probably need Ways and Means referral added. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. With that, Representative Monis Anderson, if you would come up, we'd appreciate that. And Martin Taylor is here. And Paula, I don't read your first name.
My last name is Paula.
Okay. Appa Hall. Excuse me. Paula Appa Hall. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Yes, please, Representative Morissette.
Representative Monis Anderson, I'm going to vote yes unless you talk out of it, so don't go too long.
The pressure's on. Yes.
Pressure's on.
For the record, I'm Lori Monis Anderson from District 22, which is Gresham, and I'm so excited to be here advocating for, I call it the school nurses bill. And what I have handing out is my testimony. Notice Representative Morissette that it is just basically a half a page, and I'm not even going to read it, except that this does establish a statewide goal to provide at least one FTE school nurse for every 1,000 students, and that's a goal. And also the Department of Ed will award grants, so the schools will have to apply if they are able to meet this goal. It will be a matching grant, so the school districts receiving the grant must match the grant amount $1 per dollar. It comes from tobacco settlement monies, so when tobacco settlement monies are used, that's actually freeing up general fund monies that the schools can use if they are using general fund monies to hire their school nursing personnel. So it should be a win-win for everybody. And I think as a freshman legislator, I'm new at this, but I would think everyone would think that tobacco settlement money should be used for health care. And if this can help schools, more power to the bill. With that, I will end my... Oh, also attached was a informal analysis from the Oregon Department of Education. I just wanted to point out to you that they are in support of the concept to establish the goals and for this particular bill. I won't go through it other than it would help them. They did state that school-age youth having complex health issues are increasing leaps and bounds, and this will help all school districts statewide. With that, I would like to end my testimony.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. Representative Monis Anderson, I have a couple of questions about the structure of this bill, and they relate to the issue of how you reach the 1 to 1,000 FTE, how you got and basically how you got to the idea that there ought to be a matching funds from the school district on a 1 to 1 basis. And the concern I have is that in order for school districts that are well off of this 1 to 1,000 ratio now, it would require them to pull very scarce general fund dollars out of their out of other aspects of their budget in order to add school nurses, and I suspect that would make this bill substantially less attractive to some districts as a source of funds. So I wonder if you could talk about that for just a moment.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart, and I appreciate that. And what I would like is Paula to go over some of the figures that she has of the number of schools that would be benefiting from this who could possibly reach the ratio.
Okay. Actually, I think I'm in custody of those numbers, so if I could field that. For the record, my name is Martin Taylor with the Oregon Nurses Association. Chair Backlund, Representative Barnhart. We don't have perfect data. I should start by saying that the Department of Education, as hard as this may seem to believe, doesn't have a record of how many school nurses are in each district. What we do have available is a pretty thorough study done in 1999 by an individual school nurse. And she provided that information to the Department of Education, who has provided it to us. It's what they use when they're trying to answer the same question, but I wouldn't call it perfect information. Mm-hmm. With that caveat, there were in 1999, by the evidence that we've got from that survey, 15 school districts of 179 that were surveyed that would meet the ratio right now. And they would obviously be eligible to apply for a grant to assist them in paying for their current FTE. There were 19 school districts of 179 that, if this bill passed, would immediately be eligible without any additional district dollars. And those are schools that have between 1,000 and 2,000 as the ratio, 1 to 1,000 or 1 to 2,000. In those circumstances, applying for a grant to complete the second half of that match would put them to a 1 to 1,000 or better ratio, and they would be eligible. Those districts represent approximately 22% of the districts surveyed. That should also give you a sense of the enormous need there is out there. When what we're also saying in those figures is that the balance of 78% of the school districts don't have even 1 to 2,000 as a ratio. According to this data, fully half of the school districts in the state don't have a single school nurse, which is troubling. To answer your question about what it would take for those other districts to reach this, it will depend on the district. Some districts will be very close, and it will not require them to add a lot of additional dollars, and other districts are very far away. I think in the construction of this bill, we recognize that this would be a new program, that to fund everything that would be possible, even with a match, would be probably in the range of $9 million.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Probably be in the range of about $9 million. That was our first estimate. Again, we're doing these calculations off imperfect data, but a lot, and that's with the match. We thought it was not reasonable to expect that this body is going to find a free $18 million, but if you felt inclined to do so, we would not discourage you. But that was a very strong part of the rationale of making it a match, is to make this something that was reasonably cost-effective for the state, got those first districts that are close off the ground, and created an incentive for school districts that are larger to begin to work towards a 1 to 1,000 ratio, knowing that there would be a reward at the end of it. We've all done budgets. It creates a budget incentive where, for a little bit of money, you can get a lot more back from the state grants, and so it's an incentive program. But unless Ways and Means Committee disagrees with the resources available for this, buying outright all the school nurses available, it seems unlikely.
Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart. I was talking with Baker City, which has was telling me that how they structure it is they get their nursing personnel, they coordinate it through their ESD. So then I was also talking with Multnomah County. All school nurses in Multnomah County get their school nurses through their ESDs because ESDs have the ability to specialize. So I had an amendment that I was going to give to you, but I didn't like the wording, and so I wasn't even going to talk about it. But I will this time because I am going to be proposing that amendment on the Senate side in which resolution dollars from the schools will be able to be used to purchase their school nurse through the monies, and the monies would be funded, again, it's in the amendment in the work stage, be funded through the ESDs who would then have be supplying the nurses to the schools. So resolution dollars, which every school district does have, they would be able to decide whether they would want to use that their resolution money, and if they did, then the money would go to that particular ESD for that school. So in a sense, if ESDs are willing to come on board with that in developing a good quality school nurse program, I feel it would work very well.
Okay.
Follow-up question, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
For those of us uninformed, would you please define resolution dollars?
Oh, I was hoping you, excuse me, Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, persons who could actually explain resolution dollars better would be actually the school personnel, because I don't understand it. All I know is from my school district and a board member, we have a certain amount of money that we can decide what services that the ESDs provide that we will use in our school districts. But is there someone in the audience that can...
Anybody? Oh, there's a lady raising her
hand. Please come up.
My name is Barbara Neely, and I presently am the director for the Department of School Health for Multnomah Education Service District. So we are the ESD that does provide school nurses through this process, so I can identify that process for you. And the easiest way for me to explain it to you is that if you think of a piece of pie, and you think of your basic tax dollars that you get from your income or from your tax dollars, that's one piece of funding. Then you have the funding that we get from the general fund that goes to the regular school district and to the ESDs. That's another funding. You put those two funding streams together, and then you put them in the pie. And then each of our districts in our ESD region gets a piece of that pie or a piece of those dollars dependent on their enrollment. So, for example, in our district, we have a very large school district and we have a very small school district, and each one of those districts gets a certain percentage of that pie. Then those districts have a menu of services that they choose, and then they choose from those menus, and we have school nursing on our menu, and each one of our districts has a certain amount of dollars that they can decide however they want to spend it within the ESD. So it's a tax-based structure and a general fund that are put together in one pot.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
If schools decided to use resolution dollars for nursing, then they would not be using that money for some other program that's going on. Now, do all schools max out the resolution dollars?
Some do and some don't.
What's the percentage?
I would say probably 80% to 90%, and that's just looking at my...
That do or don't?
That do.
Okay.
That's only looking at my particular area. And I will say that in our area, every district chooses the school nursing program. And you can choose it however you want. You choose how many FTE you want to buy. So you could buy one FTE if you're a very small district, or you could buy 30 FTE if you're a very large district.
And I have, for Representative Moniz Anderson. It's one FTE for every 1,000 enrolled students. Some districts aren't at 1,000. Some of our smaller districts. Do you have an equation for that? Or?
Well, we were going to hopefully have that worked out in the rules, but if they only didn't have a 1,000, they would have a percentage FTE. So if they had 750, they would be eligible for 0.75 FTE money.
Thank you.
Janet, you had a question or two?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question about whether if a school district intended to meet the goal by using the grant, would they be eligible? Because on line 12, it talks about districts are eligible if they meet the nursing goal. Would they be eligible if it was going to take the grant in order for them to reach the goal?
No, I'm not sure. In some,
I think it was the intention for that to be the case, that if you were a school that currently had one school nurse for 2,000 students, the grant would then bring your total FTE to a ratio of 1 to 1,000, so you'd be eligible for the grant. Actually, those schools, in a lot of ways that this bill is targeting as an immediate impact on, is intended to make it more achievable for school districts to get to a 1 to 1,000 ratio.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you. If I could do a follow-up to Janet. Question. So if you have a school district that has no nursing services at all and it's a district of 750, are they still eligible to apply because they do not meet the requirement?
Again, they would be matching dollar for dollar what the state put in, but yes, absolutely. That would be a school district that if they were willing to put in, you know, half of the cost of a three-quarters FTE, they would be eligible for a grant to get the other three-quarters. And those, are, again, are schools that could really use this program since there are school districts without a single nurse.
Follow up?
Yes, and I'm sorry to be obtuse on this, but the language that Janet pointed out says the department shall award grants to those school districts that meet the nursing goal established in subsection 2, which is 1,000 of this section. So if you don't meet that, you can't apply, if I'm reading this very
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, you're correct. Well, they could apply if they are willing to have the matching dollars to come up to the goal. And a nurse is approximately $42,000 per year, and so they would be eligible for the $21,000 if they supplied $21,000.
May I? Yes, Representative Morissette.
That's the salary.
Salary.
Representative.
Yeah.
But that's not the total cost. No.
Actually, that's the salary average that we got from legislative fiscal was about $32,000 per nurse with about $10,000 of related costs.
A school nurse is not paid as much as a hospital nurse.
Okay.
Doesn't even come close. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
Well,
Representative Barnhart.
Yeah, I'm still wondering how we got to the number of 1 to 1,000. I mean, is there a standard? We're going to get to that. Okay, that's fine.
Would you like to proceed, Paula?
Yes, I'm going to reintroduce myself. I'm Paula Appa Hall, and I am a registered certified school nurse in the state of Oregon. I am the district nurse for the Oregon City School District, but I am here today as the president of the Oregon School Nurse Association, and I must make that very clear, that I am representing OSNA and not my district. I do have nurses in the room that are representing the Salem-Kaiser area, Albany, Portland Metro through the MESD. We have a parent in the room whose daughter is an insulin dependent diabetic in one of our schools. The ratio that we are looking at of 1 to 1,000 is something that when I have the opportunity to sit down with Representative Mona Sanderson and members of ONA we decided that we wanted to, we were going for, or started out looking at the national standard set forth by the National Association of School Nurses, which is in their goals for Healthy People 2010, which is a federal document. They are looking at the ratio of one nurse to every 750 students nationwide. One of the handouts that I've given you discusses from the 2000 annual survey from NASA and the National Association of School Nurses. I've divided it out for you, showing you how many out of there were, there were 49 affiliates to NASA that offered information to this document, 48 states, and then the overseas nurses. We have school nurses working overseas on Army bases and American school sites throughout the world. Of those 49 affiliates, 13 of them, I've broken them down, of the states that are the affiliates that have a ratio of one nurse to every 100 to 750 students, there are 13 states that already meet that standard. Of a ratio of 751 of one nurse to every 751 to 999 students, there are 6 states that meet that standard. Of the ratio of one nurse to every 1,000 to 1,500 students, there are another 13 states that meet that standard. Of a ratio of one nurse to 1,501 to 2,500 students, there are another 13. And you will note that Oregon is in that category. Of the ratio of over 2,500 students to 6,000 students, there are 4. I've taken the liberty to let you know that Oregon, out of these 49 affiliates, we rank 40th. In ratio. There are 39 of these 49 affiliates that have a better ratio of nurse to student population than we do in this state. I've asterisked certain states. I've asterisked the states, including Oregon, that have previously sought or are currently seeking tobacco dollars for school nursing services, and I have double asterisked the 3 states that have been successful in their attempts at garnering tobacco dollars. So the way we got to the 1 to 1,000 was looking at 1 to 750 in a state this size with the nursing shortage that we do have in the schools, that 1 to 750 would really not even be something we could even hope to achieve this time around. But we did feel that 1 to 1,000 would certainly be more equitable while still maintaining the safety and integrity of the students in our schools that have such high needs.
Representative Barnhart?
Thank you. So there really wasn't an analysis made of what would be necessary, medically appropriate. I'm not sure quite what the word is, a standard word I'm looking for, but you weren't attempting to meet some standard when you picked the number 1 to 1,000. It was simply a decision based on funding and where we relate to other states. Is that right?
Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart, at the beginning, we were playing with figures, and we came up with, was it over 30 or was it over $60 million? And we felt that there was just no way that we could, we needed to bring the number down where it was workable in our revenue status that we have, our funding status that we have here. And so this was a way of trying to bring that into single-digit million dollars instead of double-digit million dollars.
Would it be fair to say then that this bill would improve the situation, but the number, but the nursing care available to students would still be inadequate?
Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart, yes, it would. At least now we would be getting professional staff in the schools so that we could be training other staff how to take care of our children, and the liability issue, which is very great, would decrease.
I may speak to that, Chairman Backlund and Representative Barnhart. I've also brought forth to you an article from this week's Time magazine, dated March 12, 2001, and I couldn't a better article or brought you better testimony on the value of school nurses. This is based on nurses in the nurses that are cited are from the state of Mississippi, who have earned tobacco dollars for their students, and also from California, who are currently also sitting before their legislators this session asking for tobacco dollars as well to increase their ratios. School nurses at 1 to 1,000 would certainly enhance the care that the children are getting in our schools. I personally have a ratio of one nurse to 7,500 students. I cannot see the children that need to be seen. When I had the honor of working in New Jersey and having a school of 550 students as one nurse, I was able to know my children with diabetics by their names. I knew their blood sugars. I did their testing. I knew exactly who they were. My kids with seizure disorders, I knew what type of day they were going to have and perhaps to have the teachers on better alert. I had my kids with asthma. I knew their medication patterns, how do you teach them to use their inhalers properly, how to use their peak flow meters. I was able to talk to the kids who were being bullied in the hallways, who were afraid to go home for some reason, who just failed a test and needed someone to help them call their mom. I was there for them. Now with 7,500 students, I'm called in when a secretary has a child sitting in the office critically ill with a dangerously low blood sugar, perhaps even convulsing or seizing from a low blood sugar, and that's a lay person trying to treat that child. I'm called in at crisis management. And that's not fair to me, and it is certainly not fair to the parents of these kids or to the children themselves. It also takes away greatly from the teaching staff. The teachers are unable to teach because the kids are sitting in class hungry. They're sitting in class knowing that maybe their free breakfast or their free lunch is the only meals they're going to have for that day. They haven't had their medication. Their medication hasn't been regulated. Parents don't have the money to go buy the medication. Are unable to learn because they're not feeling well or they're frightened or they're ill. A school nurse in the schools will enable the teachers to be able to teach instead of dipping urines for ketones and testing blood sugars and monitoring seizures. They'll have kids in the classroom that are ready and eager to learn and healthy and happy to be there.
Representative Bonhart?
A different topic, if I may.
Yes.
The definition section in sub 1, section 1, sub 1, if I read that the way I want to read it, and you tell me if this is correct, nurses who are working in a school-based health clinic would qualify in this ratio. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, yes.
Thank you.
Representative Zahner?
Mr. Chair, thank you. You have some statistics on the schools. You said that would it be eligible, the districts that you gave her, could I get copies of those? They may be in here, but I've been looking for them.
Representative Zahner, Chair Backlund, I think we had debated some length as to whether or not to present that to you because the data is from 1999 and because it was accumulated by a volunteer. The state is uncomfortable staying behind it. I'd be happy to provide that to you. As a matter of fact, we at one point thought of graphically presenting it on a map, but we also understood the risk of presenting you data that turned out to be in any way incorrect and then hurting our own credibility. So with that important caveat, I'll be providing you this data.
Great.
As long as you know that there may be some errors in it.
Maybe out of date. Yeah.
Follow up, Representative Zahner?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Did different states, I see you got a state-by-state comparison, but like Arizona probably doesn't have the asthma problem that we have in Oregon. I know people here that have to live in Bend because they can't live in Portland. So do different states have less health problems so they wouldn't need as many nurses?
I think different states have the same amount of health problems. I believe the national average is about 15 to 20% of all school-aged children have health needs. Different states certainly will have different issues. When I lived in New Jersey, we were dealing daily with Lyme disease. In Oregon, I don't really see a lot of Lyme disease, but I do see a higher number of asthmatics, diabetics, Mrs. Talon would certainly be able to talk to you about that, but we certainly have children with diabetes are a national phenomenon that is on the rise. Children with seizure disorders, children with attention deficit disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. We're also seeing a lot of children now entering schools with depression and other emotional type disorders. So there are certainly states that have higher incidences of a particular disease, but the overall percentage remains the same.
Thank you. They might have more sunburns down there.
Yeah.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions. First, I'd like to know how you got that article into the magazine just at the right date. I'm pretty impressed with that. But two others that are more substantive. I may be dense here, But my understanding from the previous questions was that actually every district is eligible if they ante up their part of the money. So a question as to who's actually eligible, everybody's eligible.
Yes. Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson.
My second question, if I might, Mr. Chair, relates to the coverage and the ESP conversation. Would you object to adding the term or the initials ESD in addition to school districts? So some people, I started to say some of us in the smaller districts, could in fact use credits to an ESD, and so that the ESDs as a consortia could apply for those.
Yes, and that is, and actually I'll give you a copy of the amendment as LC drafted, but I don't like it. It's not, they, how this amendment is worded is no money could go to an ESD until every school had could satisfy the ratio, and that was not the intent. I want money to go to ESD if there is three districts that said, yes, I can meet this standard, yes, I'm applying for this money, and so that would be the amount of money that would go to that ESD. I need to have it tidied up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wood, you alluded to this earlier, but you mentioned about maybe correcting or fixing this in the Senate. Do you want to wait to do it there, or would you want to wait for the amendment to come in out in the form that you like and then bring it back to this committee?
Yeah.
I think I would prefer to send something out from this committee.
Excellent.
That we think is good.
Yeah. I'm afraid that we would run into resistance if we didn't have another option where to find money like the ESDs.
Yeah,
because I'm afraid it would be looked at as a total funding measure, and then therefore it could be voted down. And so I think that distinction needs to be made clear.
Okay.
Representative Barnhart.
Well, and I was simply going to add, of course, that the ESD option that we're talking about would benefit small districts more than large districts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very important that, I mean, small districts are extremely disadvantaged anyway in our funding form situation. I think it's very important that we not disadvantage them anymore in a bill like this.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Representative Morissette.
Thank you. Representative Moses Anderson, you discussed briefly the salary schedule. Well, not the schedule for all nurses, but how are nurses' salaries determined? Do you belong to a bargaining unit, either certified or classified, or is that up to the district to determine the state?
Again, that I'm not sure how it works with Multnomah County ESDs.
If I may speak.
Please.
Sorry, protocol. Most of us, most of the school nurses throughout the state are on the teacher salary guidelines, and we are represented by the Oregon Education Association and fall under the contractual agreement. And the salaries that we came up with were kind of taking an average of a starting teacher's salary, and that's how we came up with the $30,000 or $32,000. I don't have those numbers in front of me, and then determined that another 15 to 20% on top of that goes to benefits and a lot.
The starting salaries vary from district to district, and again, a school official could answer the question more directly, but I know that there are some starting salaries that have been in years past. I'm not sure what it is right now with the new negotiations, $24,000 a year or $26,000, $27,000, $28,000 a year starting salary.
If I may, there are also still some districts whose nurses are on the classified salary guide, and they are paid in line with the secretarial staff and those with high school diplomas, and many of these nurses are baccalaureate prepared with many years of pediatric nursing experience.
That may be an issue that we don't need to address.
Right.
From this perspective, but it's
curious.
A good question. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think probably if nurses are treated for bargaining purposes as teachers on the salary schedule, most salary schedules will have categories depending upon the amount of education and the number of years of experience. And so while a starting salary may be, say, $25,000, if the nurse has a number of years of experience, that may put her or him to a higher pay scale.
If I may just interject for a second. You had proposed that perhaps the amendment should be made in this committee prior to going to the floor. I just want to point out that there's been some discussion about whether this bill would next go to the Ways and Means Committee on the side or to the floor. And some of the questions around ESDs may lead you into some discussions about the budget, since they're a slightly different kind of financial entity, and that may be a question that you want to put to the Ways and Means in terms of how to handle those amendments. Just a thought.
Yeah, I think we're inclined to move this to the Ways and Means. I don't know that it's set in stone, but I think that's our thought.
And how do you feel?
Yeah. Well, thank you. Do you have further testimony?
Mr. Chair, I will work on some amendments, and then if there is any other issues that you feel you would like me to address, please let me know. But I will go ahead and pursue what I have right now and do some tweaking.
Good. One last thing, Representative Monis Anderson, you mentioned you were excited about this bill, and I commend you for your enthusiasm and for your commitment. And so we'll await your amendment.
Thank you.
Chair, you asked a question if there was anybody else. There actually has been a woman who's arrived late because she had to take her kid to school.
Yes.
Mrs. Cowan.
Catherine Cowan.
And I would hope you'd have the opportunity to give her just a
minute. Yes, thank you, Martin. I was going to ask if anyone else is here in the room who would like to testify. So this would be a good time to come on up.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, good morning. My name is Catherine Cowan, and I should apologize initially for being late. What a way to be introduced, the person who arrived late. I am a resident of Lake Oswego. I live there with my husband and three children, including my fifth grade daughter, Lindsay, who is 10 years old. Lindsay has insulin-dependent diabetes, and on her behalf, I'm appearing here today to express my wholehearted support for House Bill 2960. My husband, children, and I moved to Oregon from a neighboring state, I'll admit, about 5 years ago, in large part to avail ourselves of the excellent education system in Oregon. We moved to Lake Oswego. I was astounded upon my arrival in Lake Oswego to learn, to my dismay, that we have one school district nurse who serves our entire school district. We have 7 elementary schools, 2 junior highs, and 2 high schools for a district school student population total of 7,200 students, according to district figures. One school district nurse. Lindsay is one of 27 students in Lake Oswego public schools who have insulin-dependent diabetes. Like all the other students in these schools who have diabetes, Lindsay must adhere to a very difficult and very individualized diabetes management regimen. In her case, she does the following things every single day. She tests her blood sugar level using a finger stick Lansing device and a computerized device which she keeps with her. She does this 6 or more times per day, at least once during the school day, but often twice during the school day. She wears what's called an external insulin infusion pump. Rather than taking injections of insulin, which is the way many people with diabetes maintain their lives, she now wears an external insulin infusion pump that looks much like a pager, has a tubing attached to it, and 24 hours a day she wears this device. It infuses a background amount of insulin 24 hours a day based on a pre-programmed amount of insulin. And then, whenever she eats or drinks anything that contains carbohydrates, which is virtually anything except perhaps water or celery, she needs to check her blood sugar level. Then she needs to determine how much insulin to give herself. Let me give you an example. It's lunchtime at Lake Grove Elementary School. She goes through the lunch line. She picks out a sandwich. She picks out half an apple, 2 small cookies, and a carton of milk. She says to herself, I think the sandwich is about 40 grams of carbohydrates. The apple is another 15 grams of carbohydrates. The cookies are another 10 grams of carbohydrates. The milk is 12 grams of carbohydrate. I know that I bolus one unit of insulin for every 20 grams of carbohydrate that I eat. I further know that I need to add an extra unit of insulin for every 50 points over my target blood sugar range of 150. Conversely, I need to reduce my bolus by one unit for every 50 points under my target range of 150. She's 10 years old, and this is the kind of calculation that she needs to make in order just to eat or drink anything. That's a daunting responsibility for a child. She must do this all by herself. We see our school district nurse once a year. It's at the beginning of the school year when we sit down with our school district nurse, our principal, the new teacher for the year, and that very brave front desk administrator, and we sit down and go through Lindsay's individual education plan for the year. The school district nurse has very cursory information on Lindsay. Because of the nature of her job, she simply doesn't have time to get to know Lindsay at all on a personal level. That's the last time we see the school district nurse for the year, and Lindsay's on her own. Thank goodness for cell phones, because I am available by cell phone wherever I am, and I do use it frequently. We have three students at our elementary school with diabetes, including a five-year-old boy who also uses an insulin pump. Unlike Lindsay, he is simply not at the cognitive stage where he would be able to determine how to do his own insulin and blood sugar test. He has a school daycare provider who has taken on the responsibility of learning all of these things. He gets no assistance from the school district nurse other than at the beginning of the year for his individual plans. I think it is deplorable that our schools have such a shortage of school district nurses, and I urge you in the strongest way to please support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify? Oh, very good.
Hi, my name is Carol Zirkel, and I'm the nurse for Middle Oregon Regional Services. We work under the auspices of Willamette Educational Service District. I service the kids that are birth to 5 years old. I did bring just a few, and I will be very, very brief. When I first started my job and heard that they were hiring school nurses for Salem Kaiser District, and ultimately I got into the ESC, I thought, Band-Aids and boo-boos, this is going to be a really funky job. I didn't even know what was involved. And that's what I would just like to present. It's just a tiny little scope of what our teachers and non-medical personnel are asked to do every single day in the school setting. I have children I have 11 children on my caseload right now that every single day get fed at school through a pump, and it goes directly into their stomach. Some of them are fed through the pump and a bag like this, so the staff has to learn how to do all of the mechanical things involved. Some of those same children are fed directly into their stomach through just gravity. They have a little button here, and they unplug the button, plug this in. They burp them, and then they feed them through that. I have two children in my case, so that currently have tracheotomies that breathe through their tracheotomies. They're not hooked up to respirators at school. I have some in my home care that are hooked up to ventilators, but they're too young for school age right now. But ultimately, they will be in the school system. And every single one of the little ones that I take care of now are going to be going into our public system, too, into our school age system. Anyway, they all require, or I have several that require suctioning. So the suction machine goes on the bus with them to and from school, and then staff at school has to determine when and if the child is having trouble managing their own secretion, then they have to do that oral suctioning. Like I said, I have some that have a tracheotomy, and I've had to train the staff to actually take a little tube and go with inside the tracheotomy and suction. And this is a teacher, and this is even non-licensed personnel, exceptional assistant. This is the diabetic equipment that the other lady was just talking about. They have to learn how to use the monitors. They have to learn how to poke the children's fingers and test the blood sugar. There's just a lot of equipment. One of my little ones that had the tracheotomy, I happened to teach the staff how to bag her. We couldn't use standard CPR for her because she had to do it through her tracheotomy. The other big, big thing that we're seeing in schools, and we're seeing more and more of them, are the insulin-dependent diabetics that are now bringing glucagon to school in case they go unconscious. And this is a actual needle and syringe that has to be manipulated. They have to put the solution into the vial. Then they have to shake it up, and they have to draw it back out. And we're talking about secretaries and teachers and non-professionals. They have to learn how to do this. The first time this law was passed, I had an administrator from a small, very small district that I was working with at the time call, very, very upset. And I said, I'm sorry, I'm just the messenger. He had actually tried to get the emergency medical, the EMS, people from that city to administer that. And because they only had an EMT-1, the EMT-1 could not even administer it. And yet the school secretary could and is asked to do that. And then the other things that we are seeing many, many of are allergic reactions. Severe allergic reactions are on the rise. I have children on my caseload that if another child has a peanut butter sandwich and touches them, they can go into a severe allergic reaction, or a hard-boiled egg or other kinds of food. Those are besides the bee stings and insect stings. And so staff is learning how to, when a child is having a severe allergic reaction, administer epinephrine, which is a life-saving injection for them. This epinephrine also comes in a kit that is needle, has an actual needle that you see and have to manipulate, or it comes into a standard injectable thing. So it's not just Band-Aids and boo-boos in our schools anymore. And I would just really encourage any support that you can give for having trained professionals, because it's a daunting task, and staff are scared when they first come, and this child comes, and they have overwhelming needs, and they have to perform them, and they're not trained.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else in the audience who would like to testify? I think that would be a tough act to follow. Anyway.
I think so. And they do it every day.
And they do it every day, indeed.
Yeah.
Representative Barnhart?
This may be off the topic, and it may take time you don't want to spend, but I have a question of whether this is a big increase in these kind of chronic disorders that require so much attention and care, or whether we're simply seeing people who used to be dealt with in some way outside of the public schools, or what it is. I mean, are there environmental factors or other things that are leading to this? And what do we need to do about it? I mean, this is quite frightening to me, and it well beyond the whole business of how we care for these children, but the fact that we have so many in the first place with these very specialized needs.
I may speak.
Please, Paula.
Representative Barnhart and Chairman Backlund, I appreciate your question, because that is something we discuss all the time. It's the issue of both. We do have an increasing number of children with these chronic health needs, but overall, many of these children had been previously schooled in hospital-based settings, and they are now in the classrooms. We have the IDEA, Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, that all children are entitled to a free and appropriate public education. While these bills came into place and they are nationally mandated standards, the funding to schools has gone down. Nurses have been cut because the classroom teachers are certainly valuable, because that's why the children are there, is to learn. So teachers need to be kept in the schools. The nurses were seen as ancillary and were removed from the buildings. In the meantime, the rise of these kids coming into the schools is just coming in at rapid rates, and not only are there more of the kids coming in, they are, as Carol was attesting, they are much more ill than what the general public understands. And I think that's one of the things that we want to be able to get out to you and through your constituency, is that there are many, many children in the schools with severe chronic health needs that used to be educated in the hospital setting and are now educated in the classroom.
One further comment, Mr. Chair. We are working at the federal level, too, to say that we need to bring the funding of special education up, and I forget what percentage it is at now, but I think originally the bill was said 40%, and we want to get to at least having 40% funding for our special needs kids.
I understand Oregon may be at 9%.
I thought it was about 8, but...
Yes, it is.
The national average, I think, is 11%. I just heard that recently.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chair, it sure sounds as though this area, as in the area of mental health, when you deinstitutionalize people, you also reduce support for their care. And it's unfortunately an old story at this point. I didn't realize it applied to this area, too, and it's very unfortunate that it has.
And these are children who are entitled to the same education as everybody else and who have a life ahead of them. And we want to equip them and teach them and take care of them.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2960. And we'll open a work session on House Bill 2489.
2489.
Do we need to have Janet be the summary, or I think probably we're... Well, Janet, why don't you go ahead and just, for the record, if nothing else, very quickly update us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2489 is the bill that would create the College of Veterinary Medicine and make it a four-year program at Oregon State University. We do have at the place today a fiscal impact statement. Just a couple things I wanted to point out. The bill does have a referral to the Ways and Means Committee. The appropriation in the bill is for $8 million for the biennium. That would be startup some construction and expansion and startup funds. But it would require to operate the school an additional $8 million. Per biennium for operational costs, for additional faculty, et cetera. The program does not pay for itself through tuition. And I also wanted to point out that the current number of students being graduated from the program, where they spend part of their time up at Washington State University, serves 36 students. It wasn't in the proposal that we gave to you, but there was a discussion that would increase to 48 students under the proposal with the funding that they're talking about. They have talked also about quite a bit of public-private partnership with interns in clinics, especially in the Portland area, because there's a number of clinics. So anyway, those were a few additions to what I had in the original staff manager summary. Dr. Kung is out of town, and Representative Schrader had intended to be here this morning to answer any questions that you had. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I do think that we had an excellent hearing on this bill last week, mm-hmm. And so it's regrettable that neither the dean of the veterinarian school could be here nor Representative Schrader. However, I think we are well informed, and I think we are ready to move this bill. Yeah, Representative Barnhart?
Well, I was going to make a motion.
Oh.
Perhaps Representative Starr wants
Representative
to
Starr was going to make the motion.
Either way, it doesn't matter to me. Okay. Mr. Chair, I move we send House Bill 2489 to the committee, Ways and Means Committee, with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Starr moves House Bill 2489 with a due pass recommendation to the Ways and Means Committee. Discussion?
Good bill should pass.
Yep, thank you. Paula, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Starr?
Aye.
Connor?
Aye.
Barnhart?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Marsha?
Aye.
Johnson?
Excuse.
Nolan?
No. Aye.
Chair Backlund?
Chair votes aye. Having received a constitutional majority, House Bill 2489 passes to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Excuse me, yes. Representative Starr, would you like to vote on... What bill was that, Janet? You missed a vote.
Yeah. Yes.
On 2006?
2006.
Okay. Representative Starr would ask for the opportunity to vote on House Bill 2006. Any objections? Representative, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Thank you very much. And committee, note that this day, March 15, 2001, we have adjourned early.
Wee-haw!
And mark it in your diary.
Never happened again.
Yay!
With that, the meeting's adjourned.
Right.